conference room phone rang sharply. The director threw up his arms. "It's got to be Strathmore. About goddamn time!" Brinkerhoff scooped up the phone. "Director's office?" Fontaine held out his hand for the receiver. Brinkerhoff looked uneasy and turned to Midge. "It's Jabba. He wants you." The director swung his gaze over to Midge, who was already crossing the room. She activated the speakerphone. "Go ahead, Jabba." Jabba's metallic voice boomed into the room. "Midge, I'm in the main databank. We're showing some strange stuff down here. I was wondering if—" "Damn it, Jabba!" Midge came unglued. "That's what I've been trying to tell you." "It could be nothing," Jabba hedged. "But—" "Stop saying that. It's not nothing. Whatever's going on down there, take it seriously, very seriously. My data isn't fried. Never has been, never will." She started to hang up and then added, "Oh, and Jabba? Just so there aren't any surprises, Strathmore bypassed Gauntlet." Chapter 100. Houlihan took the Geralda stairs three at a time. The only light in the spiral passage was from small open-air windows every 180 degrees. "He's trapped. David Becker will die." Houlihan circled upward, gun drawn. He kept to the outside wall in case Becker decided to attack from above. The iron candle poles on each landing would make good weapons if Becker decided to use one. But by staying wide, Houlihan would be able to spot him in time. Houlihan's gun had a range significantly longer than a 5-foot candle pole. Houlihan moved quickly but carefully. The stairs were steep. Tourists had died here. This was not America. No safety signs, no handrails, no insurance disclaimers. This was Spain. If you were stupid enough to fall, it was your own damn fault, regardless of who built the stairs. Houlihan paused at one of the shoulder-high openings and glanced out. He was on the north face, and, from the look of things, about halfway up. The opening to the viewing platform was visible around the corner. The staircase to the top was empty. David Becker had not challenged him. Houlihan realized that maybe Becker had not seen him enter the tower. That meant the element of surprise was on Houlihan's side as well. Not that he needed it. Houlihan held all the cards. Even the layout of the tower was in his favor. The staircase met the viewing platform in the southwest corner. Houlihan would have a clear line of fire to every point of the cell, with no possibility that Becker could get behind him. And to top things off, Houlihan would be moving out of the dark into the light. "A killing box," he mused. Houlihan measured the distance to the doorway. 7 steps. He practiced the kill in his mind. If he stayed right as he approached the opening, he would be able to see the leftmost corner of the platform before he reached it. If Becker was there, Houlihan would fire. If not, he would shift inside and enter moving east, facing the right corner, the only place remaining that Becker could be. He smiled. Subject, David Becker. Terminated. The time had come. He checked his weapon. With a violent surge, Houlihan dashed up. The platform swung into view. The left corner was empty. As rehearsed, Houlihan shifted inside and burst through the opening facing right. He fired into the corner. The bullet ricocheted back off the bare wall and barely missed him. Houlihan wheeled wildly and let out a muted scream. There was no one there. David Becker had vanished. 3 flights below, suspended 325 feet over the Jardín de los Naranjos, David Becker hung on the outside of the Geralda like a man doing chin-ups on a window ledge. As Houlihan had been racing up the staircase, Becker had descended 3 flights and lowered himself out one of the openings. He dropped out of sight just in time. The killer had run right by him. He'd been in too much of a hurry to notice the white knuckles grasping the window ledge. Hanging outside the window, Becker thanked God that his daily squash routine involved 20 minutes on the Nautilus machine to develop his biceps for a harder overhead serve. Unfortunately, despite his strong arms, Becker was now having trouble pulling himself back in. His shoulders burned. His side felt as if it were tearing open. The rough-cut stone ledge provided little grip, grating into his fingertips like broken glass. Becker knew it was only a matter of seconds before his assailant would come running down from above. From the higher ground, the killer would undoubtedly see Becker's fingers on the ledge. Becker closed his eyes and pulled. He knew he would need a miracle to escape death. His fingers were losing their leverage. He glanced down, past his dangling legs. The drop was the length of a football field to the orange trees below. Unsurvivable. The pain in his side was getting worse. Footsteps now thundered above him. Loud, leaping footsteps rushing down the stairs. Becker closed his eyes. It was now or never. He gritted his teeth and pulled. The stone tore against the skin on his wrists as he yanked himself upward. The footsteps were coming fast. Becker grappled at the inside of the opening, trying to secure his hold. He kicked his feet. His body felt like lead, as if someone had a rope tied to his legs and were pulling him down. He fought it. He surged up onto his elbows. He was in plain view now, his head half through the window like a man on a guillotine. He wriggled his legs, kicking himself into the opening. He was halfway through. His torso now hung into the stairwell. The footsteps were close. Becker grabbed the sides of the opening, and in a single motion launched his body through. He hit the staircase hard. Houlihan sensed Becker's body hit the floor just below him. He leapt forward, gun leveled. A window spun into view. "This is it." Houlihan moved to the outside wall and aimed down the staircase. Becker's legs dashed out of sight just around the curve. Houlihan fired in frustration. The bullet ricocheted down the stairwell. As Houlihan dashed down the stairs after his prey, he kept to the outside wall for the widest angle view. As the staircase revolved into view before him, it seemed Becker was always 180 degrees ahead of him just out of sight. Becker had taken the inside track, cutting off the angle and leaping four or five stairs at a time. Houlihan stayed with him. It would take only a single shot. Houlihan was gaining. He knew that even if Becker made the bottom, there was nowhere to run. Houlihan could shoot him in the back as he crossed the open patio. The desperate race spiraled downward. Houlihan moved inside to the faster track. He sensed he was gaining. He could see Becker's shadow every time they passed an opening. Down. Down. Spiraling. It seemed that Becker was always just around the corner. Houlihan kept one eye on his shadow and one eye on the stairs. Suddenly it appeared to Houlihan that Becker's shadow had stumbled. It made an erratic lurch left, and then seemed to spin in midair and sail back toward the center of the stairwell. Houlihan leapt forward. "I've got him." On the stairs in front of Houlihan, there was a flash of steel. It jabbed into the air from around the corner. It thrust forward like a fencer's foil at ankle level. Houlihan tried to shift left, but it was too late. The object was between his ankles. His back foot came forward, caught it hard, and the post slammed across his shin. Houlihan's arms went out for support, but found only empty air. He was abruptly airborne, turning on his side. As Houlihan sailed downward, he passed over David Becker, prone on his stomach, arms outstretched. The candle pole in his hands was now caught up in Houlihan's legs as he spun downward. Houlihan crashed into the outside wall before he hit the staircase. When he finally found the floor, he was tumbling. His gun clattered to the floor. Houlihan's body kept going, head over heels. He spiraled five complete 360-degree rotations before he rolled to a stop. 12 more steps, and he would have tumbled out onto the patio. Chapter 101. David Becker had never held a gun, but he was holding one now. Houlihan's body was twisted and mangled in the darkness of the Geraldo staircase. Becker pressed the barrel of the gun against his assailant's temple and carefully knelt down. One twitch and Becker would fire. But there was no twitch. Houlihan was dead. Becker dropped the gun and collapsed on the stairs. For the first time in ages, he felt tears well up. He fought them. He knew there would be time for emotion later. Now it was time to go home. Becker tried to stand, but he was too tired to move. He sat a long while, exhausted on the stone staircase. Absently, he studied the twisted body before him. The killer's eyes began to glaze over, gazing out at nothing in particular. Somehow, his glasses were still intact. They were odd glasses, Becker thought, with the wire protruding from behind the earpiece and leading to a pack of some sort on his belt. Becker was too exhausted to be curious. As he sat alone in the staircase and collected his thoughts, Becker shifted his gaze to the ring on his finger. His vision had cleared somewhat, and he could finally read the inscription. As he had suspected, it was not English. He stared at the engraving a long moment and then frowned. "This is worth killing for?" The morning sun was blinding when Becker finally stepped out of the Giralda onto the patio. The pain in his side had subsided, and his vision was returning to normal. He stood a moment in a daze, enjoying the fragrance of the orange blossoms. Then he began moving slowly across the patio. As Becker strode away from the tower, a van skidded to a stop nearby. Two men jumped out. They were young and dressed in military fatigues. They advanced on Becker with the stiff precision of well-tuned machines. "David Becker?" one demanded. Becker stopped short, amazed they knew his name. Who are you?" "Come with us, please. Right away." There was something unreal about the encounter, something that made Becker's nerve endings start to tingle again. He found himself backing away from them. The shorter man gave Becker an icy stare. "This way, Mr. Becker. Right now." Becker turned to run. But he only took one step. One of the men drew a weapon. There was a shot. A searing lance of pain erupted in Becker's chest. It rocketed to his skull. His fingers went stiff and Becker fell. An instant later, there was nothing but blackness. Chapter 102. Strathmore reached the translator floor and stepped off the catwalk into an inch of water. The giant computer shuddered beside him. Huge droplets of water fell like rain through the swirling mist. The warning horn sounded like thunder. The commander looked across at the fallen main generators. Phil Chartruckian was there, his charred remains splayed across a set of coolant fins. The scene looked like some sort of perverse Halloween display. Although Strathmore regretted the man's death, there was no doubt it had been a warranted casualty. Phil Chartruckian had left Strathmore no choice. When the Sissek came running up from the depths, screaming about a virus, Strathmore met him on the landing and tried to talk sense to him. But Chartruckian was beyond reason. "We've got a virus. I'm calling Jabba." When he tried to push past, the commander blocked his way. The landing was narrow. They struggled. The railing was low. It was ironic, Strathmore thought, that Chartruckian had been right about the virus all along. The man's plunge had been chilling, a momentary howl of terror, and then silence. But it was not half as chilling as the next thing Commander Strathmore saw. Greg Hale was staring up at him from the shadows below, a look of utter horror on his face. It was then that Strathmore knew Greg Hale would die. Translator crackled and Strathmore turned his attention back to the task at hand. Kill power. The circuit breaker was on the other side of the freon pumps to the left of the body. Strathmore could see it clearly. All he had to do was pull a lever and the remaining power in crypto would die. Then, after a few seconds, he would restart the main generators. All doorways and functions would come back online. The freon would start flowing again and Translator would be safe. But as Strathmore slogged toward the breaker, he realized there was one final obstacle. Chartruckian's body was still on the main generator's cooling fins. Killing and then restarting the main generator would only cause another power failure. The body had to be moved. Strathmore eyed the grotesque remains and made his way over. Reaching up, he grabbed a wrist. The flesh was like styrofoam. The tissue had been fried. The whole body was devoid of moisture. the commander.